So Richard Aldrich, it's good for artists to keep art critics on their toes, metaphorically. Here is an artist who's done so, this panel, quite literally, by staging an exhibition in, I don't know whether to say two parts and three segments or three parts and two segments, but part one was repeated after part two. So a complete rehang twice in the course of his exhibition, necessitating the return visit that his work, on the basis of its own allure, may or may not have precipitated anyway. So, did seem to me a little bit odd though, Dennis, that in fact the contents of both parts of the show could have fitted quite neatly into the space I felt. Did we possibly suffer some sort of self-indulgence on the part of the artist in the installational organization of this show?
Well, yeah, I think it was a bit hubristic to, you know, think that people are not only going to come and see your show, but see it at least twice. And the other thing about it was that I thought that I really enjoyed the way he engaged me in this, but I think a lot of the work was about, you know, kind of upsetting the way that you thought about his work, rather than each painting being something to think about. I mean, I think there were definitely paintings in there that I could, you know, spend a lot of time evaluating on their own terms, and it seemed kind of like underhanded to kind of, you know, saying, well, but really, I'm not that kind of painter. I'm really a conceptual painter.
Yes, there was a very, it felt to me like a very, at moments, heavy-handed determining of how one is supposed to look at these images, how one is not supposed to look at these images, even with a kind of directional statement framed as a work and sold as a work, in part two, the middle part, as one came into the gallery. Becky, did you find that disconcerting, or were you happy to be directed by the artist in how to look at his work?
I think I was excited initially about this idea of paintings existing in a kind of community as objects and meaning depending not so much on the contents of an individual painting, but on the paintings as a group, the way they relate to one another. So I liked the premise, and I didn't mind having it articulated at the beginning of the show, although it was a little goofy. But then when it came down to it, I think I had trouble finding what those meanings exactly were. So I guess in this multiplicity of meanings that he was maybe trying to open the door for, I found the meanings themselves a little bit elusive.
Yes. Raphael, it seemed very much a show about painting rather than of painting. Is that a fair observation? And does that help or hinder one's enjoyment or appreciation? Or?
Well, I want to agree with some of the things you've all said. I think Aldrich is a very maddening artist, and I've been really interested and responsive to his work, but at the same time, there are always a lot of things that really bother me about it. And you know, one of them is, as you said, this like unnecessarily complex conceptual restaging and staging of the show, and have, you know, lots of empty space, the cohabitation of sort of seemingly directly done touch-sensitive sort of paintings with sort of traditional qualities we look for in painting, along with completely banal sort of gestures of a kind of defiance of that, of those expectations, and also that there are so many hidden illusions or information that's not available in the work of art, which in a kind of, in my old-fashioned retinal-based empirical bias, I sort of think I should be able to get everything I need from actually looking at the work. But On the other hand, I think that in some ways he reminds me sometimes of Herman Melville's character, Bartleby the Scrivener, who always says, "I prefer not to." And I think that, you know, there's enough there that keeps me coming back to understand what is behind the motivations, what are the meanings, what is that community of circulating messages trying to say. And sometimes it seems to say nothing. I mean, I wrote once about one of his paintings, which I completely missed the fact that it was a portrait of the musician John Cale from the Velvet Underground. And I think there's a lot of things I missed. And what does that, you know, there are different ways that artists communicate and fail to communicate. And maybe he's telling us that communication, there are these contradictions where he's explaining, over-interpreting the work. At the same time, the work seems to elude interpretation.
Yes, I mean, of course, when you frame a statement about how you want the work to be read and sell it as a work, then it destabilizes the relationship between a piece and a label, and so therefore that actually might be the conceptual thrust of that work. It's saying this is how you should read the work, but don't trust me because this is a thing. This is not an instruction. I mean, it could therefore be an added layer of conceptual conceit. And in fact, he's giving us license to all be old-fashioned and retinal and empirical.
I think that this, it's good to start with this show, but we could have started with any show, because I think one of the things that is common to all of the shows that we're going to see is this concept of, you know, who is the audience for this work? I mean, I think that the audience that each one of these shows posits are vastly different in the way and expectations of how a person would approach this work. And, I think the thing that was always interesting for me about Richard Aldrich is when he engaged me, he does so in this like really unusual pictorial way where the paintings look abstract, and then when you start to look at them, they, you know, separate out. Suddenly there's a big bird in the front of them, and they're never sort of rendered. They're always, the image is always sort of found in the paint, and that makes me look at them and engage in them in one way. And then there's this, you know, potted plant and Buddha, and it's like, it's almost like a negation to me, which kind of irritated me. It was like, you know.
There seems to be, in so many painters today, the constant unfinished business of, is painting alive anymore? Can we still be painters? It's extraordinary, isn't it, that it just goes on decade after decade after decade of people making paintings and questioning whether one can make paintings. I mean, are we going to ever get to the point where they either don't make paintings or they just make paintings?
Well, you know, it's interesting because in Roberta Smith's review of the Chris Wolf show, she referred to his paintings as endgame paintings, as if endgame paintings was a new genre of painting. Right. And I suddenly thought, like, how can that be that, like, so there's still life painting and portraiture and endgame painting, and they all kind of exist on the same, yeah, you know, level.
And of course, Pontormo was making endgame paintings as well. So, but Becky, you're a painter, and you teach painting, and you come out of this hotbeds where of places where they question painting. Do you feel that Aldrich is primarily a conceptual artist who sometimes uses paint to make conceptual points, or do you feel there's a painterly sensibility regardless of what we're looking at, even the Buddhas and the flower pots?
I just wanted to respond quickly to something that you were saying before I get to that. There's a lot that's been said, I think, that is worth responding to. But yeah, I was just thinking it would be a funny assignment to give to students in a painting class. Okay, we're doing portraiture, we're doing still life, now endgame painting. Now what would that look like to a group of students studying painting?
Beginners and painting.
yeah, in some way. But is he more of a conceptual artist? I think I disagree with Dennis a little bit in terms of looking at some of these paintings and having them unfold visually. For me, I kept trying to look at them that way and hoping that there would be some kind of visual evolution or some kind of reward to looking closely. And time and again, they sort of rejected that way of looking at them for me, because I just kept seeing a lot of blank canvas and a lot of empty space and something that I could kind of read visually very easily. I think that's the way I look at a de Kooning, say, and it's, you know, infinitely rewarding. His work just doesn't work for me that way at all. And it almost seems to make fun of someone for wanting painting to look that way or to offer those kinds of rewards. But for me, what it's more about is sort of something that Raphael was starting to talk about, which is these sort of layers of references that are embedded in the work, many of which are, some of which are interesting, some of which are not interesting. But what I kept thinking from the moment I walked in to the show the first time was that I practically needed to have my smartphone in hand with Wikipedia open to start looking up these various things that were referenced in the work, because otherwise, there seemed to be really no entry point. So I started to think that this was really a show about this sort of flow of information, which was a little bit disconcerting.
But Raphael, you've begun to describe positive aesthetic experiences, responses to Aldrich's work. And it seemed to me also that when one went to part two, the office door was open, and it's a huge gallery with beautiful offices and bookcases. And if you went into the back offices, most of part one was kind of in a much looser, more sort of freer, almost pretentiously unpretentious way. One could see most of part one in the office during part two.
Well, they're still trying to sell it.
What was the order that you saw the work in? I meant to ask that.
Mine was one and then two.
Mine was the two and one, and it took me about 10 minutes of quizzing someone working at the gallery for me to understand that there were, in fact, three different installations, two of which resembled each other. And
They resemble each other, or were they exactly
alike? Actually, I saw one, two, and then one, yes. I was a bit of a glutton for punishment, but yes, or a reward.
Can I propose another way of thinking about this work is that... He's someone who does a lot. Think about it as the studio, like all of these things that happen in his studio, and some of them are paintings, and some of them are poems and text works and sculptural stacks. And he is seems like he doesn't want to make choices or leave out any of the aspects of what happens in his studio. So really what we're seeing is not, rather than thinking about it in terms of medium, thinking about it in terms of things produced within a certain place by one artist at a certain time. And he's going to, in a kind of honest way, wants to show us everything. I'm an artist. Everything I do is art.
It may be, but it may be rather than being despite the framed statement, it might be the opposite of a framed statement. It might be that it's a stream of consciousness of possibilities. It's not. I mean, the cynic would say he's hedging his bets, but the optimistic way of looking at it would be to say that he is exploring and celebrating the multiplicity of possibilities. That's the Buddha and the flower pot.
Go ahead.
I mean, I would agree, I really love that idea of celebrating the kind of banal things and the everyday things and the things that are worked a lot versus the things that are worked a little. But I also believe in editing as an artist, and I think that you need to hone in what you're trying to say a little bit. I think that's your responsibility. Otherwise, you know, we could all just walk down the street and experience the world. I don't know.
Yeah, well, you could all paint cornfields. But we do want some people to do it for us. I mean, some of us want an artist to do it for us, or we want to see what an artist comes up with when he does it.
I mean, as an artist, I'm very sympathetic to the idea that who you are does not have to be evinced by, you know, I only paint, paintings with grids and flowers and, you know, or whatever, you know, a certain thing is, and I do it with like minor variations over and over again. I mean, the idea of a self can be much more expansive than that. The problem that I have is that, you know, it's all very nice to have a show and talk about it on a review panel and stuff like that, but in the end, what is the bigger picture for an artist's career? I mean, what do you want to be left with? The work has to get fragmented, and it doesn't, I think if it just exists in the memories or on the internet as like a group of things, that's not what I grew up thinking about. I sort of thought that, you know, everybody would have a partial story by seeing one piece, and that they might not get the relationship, but any one piece could give you a whole universe. Yeah. And I think with some of his paintings, you have that. And with other things, they're just opaque and like you don't have a connection with them. And if I didn't see it again, the second time I saw it, I wouldn't get like a whole new idea about what it was.
That's true, but you could say that almost of very many artists who present their work today. I mean, even think of somebody like Wangechi Mutu, who we started the season with. There are her collages and paintings, and then there's, say, a sculptural piece that she's made, obviously, just for that exhibition as a way to present that exhibition. I think of it as being, I know what you're saying, that you want, it is, I think, though, an old-fashioned notion that every piece that comes from the artist's studio or it belongs to the artist's oeuvre has the DNA of the whole body. But maybe those things that, as it were, don't have the DNA are more like clothes and less like body parts.
Well, not just, I don't mean like the DNA. I just mean that there is in it, like when you, there's a reason for seeing it again, and that reason is that when you see it again, you notice things that you didn't notice, and that the layering of the way an artist attracts and holds a viewer's attention is kind of complex and multifaceted, and things that are just like, they look the same, that you get everything that you can get out of them from seeing them the first time, I mean, that's what kind of feels impoverished to me.
Right, yes. I had a sensation of seeing Aldrich at the same time as, actually on one occasion I saw it the same day as I went and saw Martin Creed at Gavin Brown's Enterprise, and I thought, there's something happening here. Martin Creed comes to attention, international fame, with a piece that involves turning the light on and off, about as minimal and conceptual as you can get, and then you go to see his show at Gavin Brown Enterprise, and there are these nice, pretty paintings around. I'm always thinking, is it now that the way to get away with painting, but to be in the A-list, is to first establish your chops as an anti-painter, and then say, but by the way, I also paint.
And sell them for a lot of money.
Yeah, they sell them for a lot of money, that's one thing, but obviously have fun. And the funny thing about both Creed and Aldrich is, when you just have paint expressively organized on the canvas, it's underwritten a bit or a lot, perhaps, by the kind of conceptualism of the not painting work that the same artist does. But if you try, as one must, if one is, as Raphael claims, says, you know, an empiricist and a retinal person, if we really focus on the piece itself rather than the whole career behind it, they seem to be pretty nice paintings sometimes, right? Is that, how do we sort this out?
Well, I think Dennis raises an important point. It's also what happens to the work when it's no longer under the control of the artist. And, you know, who knows where, you know, a work of art needs to be able to, if it's going to survive through history, it's got to be able to find a new context for itself and have the same, or not the same kind of impact or meaning, but some kind of meaning that will be able to transcend its initial frame. And I think that one of the things that Aldrich is doing is maybe betraying some kind of anxiety that artists have about how their work is going to be interpreted in the future. And there, Martin Kippenberger had this concept of the full service artist, that the artist should produce everything in relationship to their show, write the press release, design a poster, design a catalog, make a speech at the opening, and that you know, to be an artist is not simply making the work that's hanging on the wall or displayed in the space, but it's that, you know, following, framing the product and standing behind it in a way that acknowledges its place within the market.
And would the artist also get to choose the next show then? I mean, if he's taking that many responsibilities from the gallerist or the curator.
The artist doesn't have to buy the paintings too.
that would be.
But in fact, that's, you know, there are limits to that. And it, you know, I guess that's something why time is important and how we see that what will it look like to find one of these paintings in a completely different context in 5 or 10 years.
But then it might partly, Becky, be that one that time will tell. I always think of that print by British conceptual artist Tom Phillips about Van Gogh, time is a great dealer, that actually time will actually have to decide what was an Aldrich work and what was an Aldrich kind of non-work. If in the future they are still dealing with works, with pieces, or whether the whole audience taste goes beyond the retinal and the empirical and does embrace the career and the notional. I mean, we don't know. So not to second guess it, just to think how we cope with it now. Becky, do you have a sort of distinction in your mind between the paintings and the non-paintings with Aldrich? And if so, how do you get on with the paintings, just the paintings?
Well, I think I talked about that a little bit already when I was saying that they don't really do much for me visually. But I'm still trying to understand. I think you have to look at his work as a whole. I don't think you can separate parts, and I think he's very clear about that in his writing on the work, in terms of viewing it as a sort of whole alphabet of symbols in a way. But I'm just still trying to put it together. I'm trying to understand if we should look at this paper bag as a sort of Duchampian gesture. Is this hearkening back to a sort of 60s conceptualism? Or it seems to be a new kind of brand for me, and I'm still sorting out, I guess, in the multiplicity of meanings, where to exactly, what exactly is it about?